Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Sean, why don't you kick us off whenever you're ready?
Will do, will do.
What a beautiful call and response. Will do, will do.
Why did my non-temporary co-host go on a podcast spree?
I just sent you guys the picture. Because it's nice out, Walter's just desperately wanting to get outside as soon as first thing in the morning to sit in the sun, which is her favorite thing, much like you, Edwin.
It is my favorite thing.
She loves nothing more than sitting in the sun. And there's one the little tiniest spot it comes in on our backyard. She'll be there all day.
I know I have a... I love how tiny the little window of sun is.
And how much she matches the fence. It makes me laugh.
It reminds me of one of my all-time favorite Onion headlines. And I've probably told you this one before. Cat Congress mired in sunbeam.
Out of paper, out of stock. There's friendly faces around the block. Break loose from the chains that are causing you pain. Call Michael and Stanley, Jim Dwight Creed, call Andy and Kelly for your business paper needs. Or Dunder Mifflin, the people versus paper people. Dunder Mifflin, the people versus paper people. Dunder Mifflin, the people versus paper people.
Hello and welcome to the Michael Scott Podcast Company, a show for fans of The Office by fans of The Office. I'm your host and CPR dummy, Sean Roney.
And I'm Edwin James, director of Mrs. Albert Hannaday.
And with us, as always, our producer in the warehouse, Mr. Alex Ward.
I cannot wait to shake somebody's hand and defibrillate them. I even have a catchphrase. You've been defibrillated.
Every week we get together and talk about our favorite show, NBC's The Office. This week we're talking about the episode Stress Relief from Season 5. After that, we'll finish up our trivia sent to us by Smookler. And after that, if we have time again, we're gonna check in. We're just going to do an Ordinary Things check-in, and we're going to hear about Edwin's trip to the Philippines.
I say we do that before trivia. Really make sure we do it.
All right.
Let's say we do that. All right.
If we have time. Everything on this podcast is conditional. If we have time, we'll discuss the episode. And if we have time, we'll do the rest of the
show. Sean said he has a hard out. And then Edwin said, no, you have a hard in on this podcast.
Right now.
Before we get into all that, Alex, do we have any housekeeping to start off with?
You know, in lieu of my previous comments just now of wanting to get to stuff? No. No housekeeping. Why don't we just do the episode? What do you think about
Holy
that?
Holy moly.
Yeah.
Let's do it.
Yeah. I mean,
join us on Patreon. Join us on Discord.
Check out our show notes. That every episode in the show notes is our housekeeping. So just go there. But we have no other structural news for the show. So
fabulous. Today's episode is about stress relief from season 5, episodes 14 and 15. Directed by... written by Paul Lieberstein. We know him. Toby. Directed by Jeffrey Blitz, who I mentioned on the show before. He's directed several episodes of The Office, but he also directed the documentary Spellbound.
No way.
Which I love that
movie.
From 2003. This great... If you don't know it, it's this great documentary that follows these kids who are entering like the national spelling bee championships or something like that. And it is very funny and very heartwarming. And I mean, it's also really
suspenseful and intense. Like it's one of those documentaries, like documentaries about competitions or weird sports or stuff. Those are my always my favorite kinds of documentaries. There's a few types out there, and this one is like stands atop the rest. I think it won the Academy Award that year for best documentary. Am I right?
I think it was definitely nominated, and yeah, it won a bunch of awards.
It's
but
gripping.
And it's another circumstance where we've got a documentary filmmaker joining the team of The Office.
That's funny because in the extended cut, there's a deleted scene of Kelly revealing that she was came in 17th in the National Spelling Bee, and she starts to spell defibrillator. And I wonder if the director was like, "Hey, this is my domain. Let's
wink. Do this joke." That's his. Yeah. That's his signature on the episode.
Yeah.
Episode. Noun. E-B-I-S.
Can I have the language of origin, please?
Directed by Jeffrey Blitz, aired on February 1st, 2009. Edwin, why are we talking about stress relief this week?
Well, Stress Relief is an episode, one of the most memorable episodes of The Office for many reasons. I believe it is the record for the most highest ratings. But more specifically, we got a note from Shay, who wrote, "Hello, fellas. It has come to my attention that you guys haven't done an episode on Stress Relief yet. This is unacceptable. Please fix it as soon as possible. Sincerely, Assistant Regional Manager, Shay."
That's all it takes with us.
Shay makes a good point. Typically, we don't negotiate with terrorists, but this is you're absolutely right. Stress relief. I kind of was surprised too that we haven't done this one yet.
I don't mention this, but this was a post Super Bowl episode, and therefore I believe the highest rated Nielsen rating office of the episode of the whole show. Pretty sure.
Yeah, I believe so. I think that I remember the Super Bowl actually. I think it was Arizona Pittsburgh. Is that right? But I'll have to look it up. But I do remember this this episode of The Office, watching it after the Super Bowl, and the advertisements that tease cameos from Jessica Alba and Jack Black, which is pretty funny. To see how that came to life in this episode.
Yeah,
I think one other thing, as far as us not doing an episode on stress relief, I think kind of similar to some of the seasonal recaps and the finale, it was, I think, one that we wanted to maybe save a little bit, or at least utilize at the right time. And I think we put that idea in our shoe and we forgot about it until now. So now is as good a time as any to dive into stress relief. And I will say, looking back on when we started this podcast and that the Superfan Cuts exist now, very excited to talk about the additions from the Superfan Cuts, because, I mean, they're incredible for this this episode.
Yes. And you guys are correct. Yeah, it was the highest Nielsen rating with 22.9 million viewers because it aired after the Super Bowl.
You're correct, Sean, you were correct, Edwin. This was that Super Bowl this year, Super Bowl XL3.
Nice.
Steelers defeated the Cardinals 27-23. Spoiler alert.
We watched the Super Bowl. I remember this. It was in college. We watched it at our friend Chris Will and Pat's apartment.
Yeah, it was a good one too. Big Ben. Yeah. Late drive down the field.
Remember, Sean?
Sean, you remember this one? What was your favorite moment?
You remember
from that Super Bowl?
I remember the promos for this episode of The Office, and it was particularly Angela throwing the cat through the ceiling. I was very excited to see this. And maybe that's a good place to start, which is the cold open for this episode when Dwight is orchestrating a fire drill.
Is this the most famous cold open in The Office? It must be. Is this the most well-known cold open in this show?
Yeah, I want to say so. Yes, because it was also like promoted with so much like footage from this scene.
I mean, watching the Superfan cut, I didn't pick up anything in the cold open that hadn't been added, and even still, like, I were there any extra? It didn't seem like there were any extra shots.
It's small, it's not a ton, but I think there was a little extra footage of them running, a couple of extra camera angles. It's not a ton, I believe,
because I clocked the cold open at like 4.5 minutes. It's very long cold open. Like it is a whole story that happens. It is like there's a lot of depth to it. There's a lot of action. By far the most, you know, action shots we get in this show outside of
the cold open on the original or in this.
Yeah, I mean in both. Just on The Office. I mean it's insane. And we were talking about this yesterday, Sean. Is it the only time we ever see anyone smoking on The Office is Dwight's drag of a cigarette to kick this whole thing off. You mentioned one.
Is that true?
Yeah, no, I was like, no, there's another time. The woman at Anger Management is smoking a cigarette outside when Andy walks up to her.
Yes. Not counting cigars. We're talking smoking a cigarette.
Okay, yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
And isn't there a shot of the Vance Refrigeration guys throwing the joint in the parking lot? I think that might be a super fan edition as well, but yeah.
Yes. But in terms of someone ripping a heater, this is Dwight takes a good long drag and throws it in the trash. But of course we see him prepping, you know, smashing keys in the thing, to hammering wedges.
Heating up
under door
handles.
Yeah, heating up handles.
Yeah.
That is that will become his signature in the title sequence for many years to come.
Yes. I also like always thought he just starts a fire. It's not even it's not exactly a simulation. Like he set a wastebasket on fire and walked away.
Yeah.
Yeah, there is, you know, for someone who is standing there yelling instructions, asking about the protocol, have you ever seen a burn victim? Calling back to the fire, of course, a damp rag can be used over the mouth, all these things. There doesn't actually seem to be a planned escape.
No.
So if everyone had reacted calmly and followed procedure, what would they have done? They would have still found a locked door.
They all went to the exits. They tried them all. They touched all the handles. Like he just trapped them in and started a fire. It's really bad. And like it's not. Yeah, you're right, Sean. It's not like he had a fog machine that he put under a door to simulate like smoke. He just straight up starts a fire.
Who actually put out the fire that he started? We wonder.
Yeah, for sure. I do, but I mean, particularly, I love Michael's reaction to the fire. I mean, everyone has their own hilarious reaction to the fire, but I mean, Michael's stay fucking calm. It's one of the greatest bleeped moments of the show. Shout out to our bleep draft that we still need to do, I think. Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It's in there.
He's quick to be like every man for himself and abandon his ship, just like he does in the fire episode.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it takes a while for anyone to actually sort of get into gear as far as actually responding. There's kind of that they move as a group to one door to the other door. What does warm mean? You know, Michael's freaking out. And then at a certain point, everything breaks loose. And then it's a little bit of Jim, I'm not going to die here, trying to get the copy machine through the door with Toby. but everyone else just goes for themselves. Oscar goes into the ceiling. Kevin breaks the vending machine. Andy thinks the fire is shooting at them. Everything spirals out of a muck.
And much like the real purpose of an overhead projector, it is thrown out the window. Michael smashes a window with it. That's the last we see of it. And I haven't seen an overhead projector since. That is an antique now. And a good throw by Michael, though, getting it through that glass, screaming help.
You know,
I mean,
this is a two-part episode, and probably rightfully so, because there is so much ground that has to get covered. But if this were a one-part episode, you have to think the tag would be somebody from Vance Refrigeration walking out and finding their car smashed with an overhead projector.
Yeah, for sure.
Or Stanley's car again.
Yeah.
That's good.
Stanley's car again. Yeah. You've got to be kidding.
That's
me.
Really good. Yeah.
The cat, I mean, Save Bandit is kind of become a kind of a cemented, I feel like, famous phrase. I feel like I've seen Save Bandit shirts and stickers. Oscar's legs dangling from the ceiling.
Also, Creed's turn and scream is like one part of it for me.
Amazing. Very good. I don't know why Dwight feels the need to throw a firework in there, you know, with the fire mm-hmm. shooting at us. He just goes way too hard.
He's
sick with power, yeah.
This episode is like a very, very like aggressive version of Dwight.
Yes.
Yes.
Especially like compared to a lot of other eras of the show. Yeah.
He should absolutely be fired for these things.
Yeah.
100%. And yet he doesn't even like he's not even stressed about it. Ironically.
Nothing stresses me out. Yeah.
Of course, it all ends in Stanley on the floor as Dwight announces that it has just been a simulation, at which point Michael tries to resuscitate him by shoving his wallet in his mouth and screaming that Barack Obama is president and you are black, Stanley.
I think one small addition to this scene from the Superfan cut at the very, very end is Kevin leans over to help and all the chips fall out of his pockets onto Stanley.
Yeah, that was a deleted part.
Kevin immediately resorting to looting is one of my favorite.
It's
parts
just like an table. Extra couple seconds at the end of the scene that we already have, but it's just very funny to watch the potato chip bags like cascade out of his jacket pockets.
I also just love the image of everybody pulling Michael off of Stanley. It's just, yeah. It's the beginning of one of the better jokes of this episode is that like Michael really loves Stanley and is really, really like it's a catalyst for another episode. When they go and now it just escaped me, but when they go and attack the other branch,
Branch Wars,
yes, Branch Wars. But yeah, it comes up a few times in this episode that Michael deeply does not like want Stanley to die or to leave.
Or even work from home.
Or even work from home, which is one of the deleted scenes we get.
So one addition that we get in this episode, and I'm only jumping ahead to it because it's a metaphor for the way that Michael expresses his affection, is Phyllis is so happy to see Stanley when he comes back that she hugs him too hard and hurts him somehow. You know, he kind of grunts with pain and Michael has to get Phyllis to stop. But that is the way that Michael loves Stanley all the time. It is suffocating and aggressive and way too much to handle. Yeah,
it's true. He does.
It's true.
He loves Stanley so much.
Mm-hmm. I mean, from the cold open, we jump, if you're okay with me moving this.
Yeah, yeah.
Moving on, we go right into Dunder Mifflin Corporate with Michael and Dwight on one side of the table and then David, Kendall, and Michael eventually on the other side of the table.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. This is an incredible scene.
It's funny that the way that David Wallace brings them in for questioning, but it isn't like, you know, only at one point does he say we have cause to fire you. It doesn't like it feels like this should be a more serious threat than it is. You know,
we should remember that Dwight is the number one salesman at the number one branch. Hmm. So it's I guess that would be the only reason that they wouldn't want to get rid of him, maybe.
I mean, Dwight's body language and general vibe, that whole meeting is kind of like, why am I here, guy? Like, he kind of has this, like, this is ridiculous, guys. Like, come on. But I agree. It's, I mean, until he hasn't brought a gun and shot it in the office yet. So until that, like, this is 100%, like, you're 100% fired right away. Like, he wouldn't even go to New York for this disciplinary hearing. It's just like, yeah, you're done.
I think you can like be arrested for this.
Yes. Yeah.
I mean, similar to the way that Roy gets fired kind of off screen, the way Toby's like, so we fired Roy, obviously, you know.
Yeah. Right.
But I think it also may be a part of the sort of pat turn of disrespect and inappropriate behavior. Corporate, I mean, in this season, like, this is leading into Michael Scott Paper Company. This is leading into the company being bankrupt and being sold to Sabre. So there is an element of like corporate incompetence, generally speaking. And I think we can attribute it to that.
Definitely.
Yeah, yeah, there's other things on their mind.
Love to see some great Dwight Michael comedy here with the nobody heeded, took headed of my warning. Just the way that Rain just kind of keeps trying to say, he stays on the same sentence, but he's got Michael in his ear the whole time.
Take headed.
And I don't see.
No one would take headed of my instructions.
Them heeding this here now. and then one of my favorite moments too is Michael getting up and looking out the window. The city.
Just a slow movement from the being in trouble side of the table to the disciplinary side of the table. It's like Michael, it's like you're like a kid just like hiding, thinking, oh, yeah, they're not, I won't be in trouble if they don't see me. It's like, dude, go, you're so dumb.
It's kind of a brilliant move. It's almost, it's actually kind of reminiscent of the, it feels like a thing out of Curb Your Enthusiasm or from Seinfeld. You just kind of like work your way over.
Yeah, I sidled.
Kind of,
sidled.
Yeah. Yeah. He sidled. Yeah. And like, there's also something really like wonderful whenever Michael has to force his way into a lineup. Shove down, please. Like when he like at Phyllis's scooch, wedding, when he has to like
I'll shoot you yep. in the head.
Yeah, or Phyllis's wedding when he has to like get. He won't be the last person in the line.
Yeah, he says the same thing. I think.
Yeah. Shove down is such a funny like shove way to phrase it too.
It
does
is
that a lot too. We talked about this in our draft of the, trying to get his foot in the MRI machine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
during the injury.
In Shove Down also kind of reminds me of when he's on the phone with Ryan later and he says, or earlier, I should say, in the, and he says, well, I sort of ran down Meredith with my car. Like the Shove Down is perfect in this context.
It is.
Yeah. And then, you know, as far as Dwight's attitude, you know, he says, I think it's funny how corporate thinks they can paper over everything with 20 minutes in a high rise in New York City. Mm-hmm. His attitude is so flippant towards towards the discipline as well.
He's not wrong.
Hmm.
Yes,
that,
but
that one.
By the end of the meeting, it's struck a nerve with Michael that mm-hmm. they could have lost a man's life, and that man is Stanley Hudson, and how that could have affected his life. He is truly disturbed by that idea. And I love how Michael's like, you know, Dwight says, I'm planning a bomb scare that's really gonna get the blood pumping. If you needed any other reason to believe that he hasn't learned his lesson. And Michael just is like very calmly like, that's not happening. I'm safety manager now. Like
you? Dwight is incensed.
What is the meaning of this? Yeah.
At which point Michael apparently hires calls the Red Cross, perhaps, looking for a CPR dummy.
Yes.
We do get a deleted scene here that he tried to do CPR on a on a ventriloquism dummy.
That but visual he did it. Is unreal. It's so ridiculous.
But he didn't like the smile that it kept smiling back at him. He's like, why is he smiling? He's having a heart attack.
Yeah, we get an extension of this scene with Rose. More moments with Rose that are truly just unhinged.
Yes.
I think it's the best way to describe it.
And
Michael does allude to the fact that the only reason you're here is you're only here because I couldn't get an actual CPR dummy. So if you want to go wander around for an hour.
Yeah, he just wants the dummy.
Yeah.
We should.
They're like straight up harassing her. At one point she says, I am here to do a job. And you cannot talk to me that way.
I know. Because that's also an extended cut. She makes a joke, or, you know, she tried to kind of cut the tension a little bit. And Michael's so not having it. And is just like, this happens.
Michael
sometimes.
Doesn't like it when anyone else gets a laugh.
Yeah, when anyone else gets a little laugh. Exactly. Yeah.
When he senses any amount of stand up from anybody, he shuts it down. And this happens a few times in the office. It just if a stranger comes in as a quote unquote I'm going to teach you or I'm an expert. Like The Office kind of bands together to just chase them out. Like this feels like this kind of happens a lot. Just like it's a hornet's nest in there if you're an outsider. And Rose really sees the worst of it here. We should say too that before this we get the wheelchair ready for Stanley. We get a talking head in the extended cut with Stanley in a wheelchair, and it was so jarring when it happened because the framing of that talking head is so different than anything we've ever seen. It was great.
Yeah, we're gonna. I think we'll jump around a little bit, but there's this period of time, and it's definitely padded by the extended cut. But Stanley returning to the office. Everyone trying to figure out how to treat Stanley. The CPR is part of this, but like Michael's attempts to create a less stressful environment, like that kind of takes up the rest of part one of this episode. But so like as we'll jump around, it's all part of this overall sort of theme of Stanley returning and everyone figuring out how to work with him there.
I also just wanted to real quick say that talking head of Stanley in the wheelchair really is jarring and looks really weird. And I was wondering if it is a green screen because he's like kind of raised up in the wheelchair. I don't know if you guys had that thought as well. And then I was like, I wonder if they ever do green screen for those talking heads so that they don't have to have the whole set lit.
I did not have that people. Thought. Sorry.
I don't.
There is. I mean, it is framed so strangely because it has to give the full visual of him in the wheelchair. Mm-hmm.
Curious if anyone else.
They bring him back, and they make him. Michael makes him sit in the wheelchair. I don't know why this made me laugh so much, but Andy wheels him around. And he goes, "Stanley dog." Burned you my favorite Enya songs or whatever. Just the Stanley dog.
I had that note. Forget the teapot letter. Give me the CD of Enya songs sung by Andy.
I also really enjoyed Kevin as Stanley's bathroom buddy. Michael has assigned him as bathroom buddy. And and Stanley's like, you know, no thanks. And Kevin like turns to Michael and it's like, and he goes, sounds like he doesn't want it. And Michael looks at him and shakes his head. and then Kevin's like, turns back around and is like, well, Stanley, maybe I'll go to the bathroom when you go to the bathroom or something like that.
So we can talk about stuff.
Yeah.
And Stanley's getting smothered by the office.
They really, I mean, a lot of what is cut and what comes back is how much they were really suffocating him, so to speak, with their attention and affection. Phyllis just staring at him from across the desk.
A little tear in her eye. Speaking of smothering, I mean, that's ultimately what happens to the dummy in the CPR scene. Its face cut off. I mean, it's, again, Dwight could, as safety officer, could not take it less seriously. Even after his corporate reprimanding, he then pretty much, I mean, we get the jump cut to corporate right after the fire alarm, amazing. But then it happens again after the CPR. Did you have to cut the face off the dummy?
And it's funny because like it happens so quickly. Like it's another sort of ramp up, like tension and release sort of thing where he's like, they're all, you know, we've only got minutes to harvest. Give me some ice in a styrofoam bucket. Where's the heart? The precious heart. I'm like, I need to sit out. And then, like, you know, he does it. And then the thing that's in my head is Stanley going, oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
As Dwight slowly turns around.
Yeah. And Angela screaming as well. And then it cuts, like, you know, tension and release. It cuts to, did you have to cut the face off the doll?
Good stuff. Poor Rose just getting turned around every which way here, trying to teach Michael, you know, do it to the rhythm of Staying Alive. Oh, I love that song. First I was afraid, like Michael goes to the wrong song. Little dance party.
I always love Michael's church singing voice too. I feel like it's
Michael Scott's a good singer. He's a very good ice skater. he This bears mentioning too. Just googling, when I just googled office stress relief, CPR saves life. A lot of results come up, as we've talked about. This is one of the most consequential TV scenes ever in terms of actually saving human lives, because people remember this scene of how to actually give CPR. I just googled it. First page results: dad in Indiana uses it to save daughter. A mechanic in Arizona saved a customer using this scene. A teenager in Boston saved a classmate by remembering this scene. All over the country, people are saving lives using Nurse Rose. I mean, she got the job done outside of the show, mainly.
The one person that wouldn't help, in addition to Michael, would be Kevin. Who, yes. It's only been 20 seconds. Call it.
I do love Rose's like frustration, but like she keeps going. There's a deleted part too where, Michael also points out, you know, that the doll has no arms or legs. What kind of life even is that? Yeah. Kevin, you basically live like you have no arms or legs now. I had a hot take or a theory that, you know, probably a million people have already come up with, but this is the origin of Michael's movie tagline that makes him cry, that he had no arms or legs. He couldn't see, hear, or speak. This is how he led a nation.
Yeah, probably.
He went home that day and wrote that down.
I think he probably used his voice recorder.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
In the deleted scenes, like Rose has this whole part where she's like, okay, fine. Like, this is now a battlefield scenario.
Yeah, she gives them that little bit of slack and they run with it. We're not covering tourniquets. Should be the first thing we cover.
This leads to Dwight. Go ahead.
Yeah. Oh, I was just going to say, like, you know, Steve Carell, who has like this kind of a very impressive improv background, like it is kind of improv scenes within the context of The Office.
For sure.
It's fun to watch these actors play around in this kind of this kind of space.
So all this leads to another corporate wrist slap. The dummy cost the company $3,500, and Dwight has to apologize to everyone. You know, so he then spends a lot of the rest of the episode just trying to get people to sign his statement of regret. I state my regret.
This is very grade school punishment.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, if this is a sign of Dunder Mifflin's mismanagement, this is like, what are you guys doing?
If this line is any indication.
There is, I mean, it leads into the second half of this episode as well, this whole of sort of thing where Dwight is trying to get signatures. I do love when he's talking to Phyllis. Stanley signs, and there's an like he signs, and he's the first one to sign. And there's a deleted scene where Stanley says, "They say that letting go of anger is good for your heart. So signing Dwight's form just bought me this wheel of brie." And he takes a bite out of an entire wheel of brie,
right through the rind.
Yeah,
hard.
Yeah. We also get, let's see, I mean, Jim kind of has an extended, a deleted scene with Dwight where he makes Dwight smile. He tells Dwight he needs to smile more. He takes a picture of him. I kind of wish there was a payoff of that, what he planned on doing with the picture.
Yeah.
There is I love when he talks to Phyllis and she won't sign. He's Stanley signed. She said, "I don't believe you're sorry." And he says, "That is correct." And she says, "And I don't think you're going to change your ways." He says, "Now we're getting off topic. Do you want me to come back when you're less hysterical?" It just speaks to, like I said, this version of Dwight is no flinch, no compromise. He believes everything he's doing is in the right.
It's predatory Dwight.
Mm-hmm.
It's true.
One other thing we see throughout this sort of period where Michael has realized, eventually Michael sort of realizes he's the problem, but in all of these efforts to get Stanley to be calm and like The Office, There's a deleted scene of having a not dead sign on Stanley, because Michael thinks he's dead at one point when sleeping. Stanley's just sleeping in his chair. Also, we don't really get in the original cut. The defibrillator is not really introduced.
Okay,
I was
so
going to say this is the main. Yes. This is
not
the
introduced
main
at
thing.
All.
No, it's completely cut from the episode, but there are several scenes involving a defibrillator that Michael has found. There's a lot of discussion of how to pronounce defibrillator. That's where we get Kelly saying that she was, in the spelling bee.
She lost also that word and immediately gained 40 pounds.
I found Michael's, these scenes. I found these scenes hilarious.
Yeah,
personally,
same.
And I feel like if they were included in the episode, they would be like incredibly well remembered and memorable scenes. Because like it's the one thing where everyone reacts like as if Michael has something really dangerous, because he does. And there's like this whoa kind of moment where like everybody's backing away. Dwight runs away into Michael's office. No one is happy that Michael has this horrible defibrillator. And he goes to shake Toby's hand.
Oh my God.
You know? And there's that moment. Put her there, pal. And Toby shakes his hand, nothing happens.
He forgot to turn it on.
Yeah, he looks down, realizes he didn't turn it on. He like lets out this expression, turns it on, and then tries to shake Toby's hand again. No.
It's so good. It's so funny. He's just trying. Yeah, it's such a dangerous
it's
prank.
Just like Michael's holding a stick of dynamite for like 10 minutes in this episode. Once he realizes what the defibrillator can do, immediately becomes a toy for him as the safety officer, and it's not good for anyone.
It reminds me a lot of the other deleted scene in a different episode. I don't remember exactly which one, so I apologize for that. But where Michael gets really into when someone does something good, giving them a pat on the butt. Yep. So when he's like walking around trying to like give everyone these little encouragements, and they're all trying to avoid him because of that. It's very, very similar. But yeah, I love the portable defibrillator thing. You included it, Alex, in the intro, but that scene where he's breathless and crying, laughing to himself about I can't wait to defibrillate someone. It's incredible.
I think he pronounces it two different ways, even just in that quote. Yeah. He really has no idea what the word is.
I also just love the way that part one, the ending that they have for part one, is Kevin has the defibrillator and puts it on Meredith's seat like a whoopee cushion. Yeah. And then it's just like the very quiet ending where she just sits down and her hair just very slowly stands up. And then Kevin just goes, wow.
What a special effect there by the team at the office to get her hair to raise up like that slowly.
It is really good. And Meredith looks hilarious.
Once again, like Kate Flannery just willing to physically put herself in any situation for the show.
Yeah.
What a star.
I think, you know, it's worth mentioning. So the rest of this episode, or the rest of the first half of this episode, is them discussing making the office less stressful. This is where Stanley walks in to Michael's office and suggests working from home. And he said, I don't understand. Then you won't be here. You'll be home. This is where I see you. And Stanley outlines all of these reasons why it would make sense. I can email my orders directly into the warehouse. You know, that line, this is where I see you, is pretty amazing. And it's also funny, given our relation to remote work now, I think it would make so much sense for Stanley to work at home, at least in some sort of transitional or temporary basis. But it's so funny how even when Michael brings the rest of the office in, he pulls up that little chair from the seating area and he brings everyone around to talk about why the office is so stressful. He's like, Stanley even wants to work from home. No one in the group says that would be a good idea or that makes sense. Like if this were to happen now, you imagine everybody would be like, yeah, that makes sense. Like it's a sort of a collective sort of noise and then Michael go, no, we can't let this happen. But it's funny how that happens.
Concept then, in 2009 that you would do that. Yeah.
And he also, I also love that he brings everyone in and he says, what are the causes of stress in this office? Kevin says, too much work. He says, yeah. Jim says, baseball. He goes, good. And he goes, what do you mean? He goes, I don't know. That doesn't make any sense. Why did you say good? And then Michael has nothing to say back.
It's so dumb.
I love that so much because it's Jim like like joking with like making fun of the whole thing. But then when Michael questions him on it, he also questions it back. That doesn't make any
Why
sense.
Did you say
Why good? Did you say good? And Michael has no response.
Yeah. There's a few, man, there's a few like just like dumb, like totally like unrelated jokes in this that got deleted. It just makes me think of the other one, which is when Dwight gets Michael to sign his form. And Michael just, and I noticed, like, I'm like, oh, weird. Like, that pen has, like, a little bit of chain at the top. And, but Michael signs the form and just puts the pen in his pocket. And Dwight's like, you stole my pen. He's like, no, this is mine. He's like, no, that's my pen. It says Chase Bank of America. It has a little bit of chain on it.
Just ripped it off the bank.
It's just like, it's such a stupid. And then Dwight just takes all Michael's pens off his desk as he leaves. It was just a stupid little scene. It was so funny.
Yeah.
You wonder how much of that kind of stuff, you know, obviously we get a lot of it coming back in the Superfan cut. And it kind of reminds me of the tonality sometimes of some of the things that are shot as like promos, you know, that are there, but they were never intended to go in the episodes. But like kind of these funny joking back and forth with the characters are, I feel stupid saying this, when they're in character and they're joking in something that isn't really consequential to a scene. How many moments like that do we get? Plus we're not filmed or we're edited out or just kind of lost, you know?
We also get a group. That's what she said.
That's right.
Incredible.
Phyllis says we could squeeze stress balls.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then they all say that's what she said at the same time. And then Jim like turns to the camera and is like, amazing. Wow.
He says amazing.
Like, that they cut that. Like that would be a Hallmark Office moment. Like a famous moment. So what restraint that they cut that.
You know, it makes me wonder why they cut so much from this episode. It might be because they had so much, or they had to make it fit in a time slot or something.
Yeah.
Because the extended cuts each come in at like 33 to 35 minutes each. So that is like a very long time of TV. Mm-hmm. But it's crazy how much they cut because, I mean, I understand that there's time and all these things, and some of these things don't contribute directly to the plot. But it's so much quality. Like, In some of the other episodes, the things that get added in, and I don't mean to be overly critical, but like they aren't nearly as funny as this stuff is, you know?
I wonder if this episode, they knew this was going to air after the Super Bowl and there was probably, you know, some a lot of attention put into this being, you know, a really great episode. So I wonder if they beefed it up a little bit. So that there would be more to, you know, cut and pick from and find the funniest things and lose the things that aren't as funny. I don't know.
They knew that the Super Bowl was going to be XL3. So this episode in its original uncut time also had to be XL3.
Nice. There's a B storyline of this episode that's kind of been happening as all this is happening, which is that.
Do you want to get to that after a short break? Perhaps.
What say we do?
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Well, I hope you brought your appetitos, m'lady, Matuna. We're going to talk about the B storyline in this episode, which is Jim, Pam, and Andy watching Mrs. Albert Hannaday.
Which is an extension also of Pam's parents going through some turmoil and them sort of navigating what's going on there, which I find it quite jarring with the rest of the episode, with everything going on, that like there's this very, very, very serious story happening under the surface while they're watching this ridiculous movie. Like, it's just it's a bit jarring is all I'll say.
It is. It's a little weird. I also had the thought, too. I was like, the movie is so weird that they're watching. Like, it doesn't look like anything like a real movie.
So weird.
And I was kind of like, oh, Jeffrey Blitz, the director, has only directed documentaries. So maybe, like, I don't know if he wasn't quite sure. I don't know. There's something, there's just something weird about it that I don't know how to explain it. But yeah, I don't know. I think, man, I kind of forget that this is in Stress Relief sometimes. And I think it's a little bit of a,
yeah,
I don't know. It doesn't live up to the rest of the episode.
It hasn't aged well for me. I would say the overall B storyline, or just the watching a movie with Andy in the break room, first of all, is like, okay. I mean, I know Jim's like, it's nice to take her mind off of things. And so we're watching this movie with Andy, who knows how to download movies. I don't know. It just, as time goes on, and it's just like, yeah, the movie's so weird. It kind of feels like the writers just went with the first idea they had and they never worked on it. It was just sort of like, what if it was this story? And they're like, fine. Which on the Dunderpedia, it says, this episode features movie stars Jack Black, Cloris Leachman, and Jessica Alba in the film Mrs. Albert Hannaday, which features what some would consider a taboo subject, a love triangle with a, quote, May, late December relationship, which made me think of the movie May, December, which just came out. Is that a common term, like the May December as like a May, older woman and a younger man? I've never heard it.
I never heard of it until the movie either. But yes, it's like,
I'm also not familiar.
Young and old, May, December.
Oh, okay.
I think.
Okay.
I will say. I mean, if I think it's. I don't have the same. Issues with this storyline maybe that you guys do. I think it's fine. I think it's really silly. And I think that part of the reason it is the way it is because the Jim Pam element, which is there's something going on and between Pam's parents. So her dad's been staying with them and like there's that, like that's very direct. So they have to kind of like, they have to kind of bury it within something really silly, which is like watching this movie with Andy to make it sort of fit within the rest of The Office a little bit. I agree. It's kind of like random that they're just watching the movie in the break room. It feels the most random in the version or the additional scene that is put in where it's like, I think Cloris Andy's just watching by himself. Cloris Leachman is talking to Jessica Alba by herself or something. But It's almost like too many of those scenes do make it feel really, really added. But generally speaking, I don't know. I just think it's very funny and very silly.
I like it the most for Andy's contributions. Yes. Just like M'Lady Matuna.
I love when he pours out the popcorn bag.
Damn it. Yeah. Love that. Love him being
really
stressed out.
It's like
really
he used the popcorn
out.
Bag that Jim uses to prank Dwight about the radiation in The Office.
Three
kernels pop, yeah.
Yeah. I also just like, at the end, he's really stressed out that he doesn't understand what Jim and Pam are talking about, and he thinks that he doubts his ability to analyze the movie, and it's just like it's such a funny like moment that I think maybe everyone can kind of relate to, where you're like, everyone's getting something that I'm not. and then of course his quote at the end about wanting to be an art critic or a food critic.
Mm-hmm.
These muffins are bad.
Yeah,
I do love when he says, when they're talking about, well, that's maybe about something like a discussion that happened over breakfast, and Andy says, "Do you mean earlier when they were eating soup, or is soup supposed to symbolize breakfast?"
Yeah, Andy's spiraling here. He's just looking for anything to grab onto, because he's. And Jim and Pam could not care less what Andy is even talking about or the movie or anything, because like they're dealing with
kind of mean,
but they're also like, it's like, why are they making Andy do all this? Like, they're using this movie time to also talk about this thing going on in front of Andy, which is that, Pam's dad has been staying with Pam and Jim. Their relationship between Pam's mom and dad is just, is breaking down. They're not talking to each other. There's tons of miscommunication. All of this Andy interprets as their movie review. But eventually, like, I don't know, this part of the story actually kind of comes to a really sweet place, you know. For a minute there's some real tension between Pam and Jim of, like, what did you say mm-hmm. to my dad, you know, when you're
right.
eating breakfast this morning? And Jim's like, I honestly have no idea, truly.
You know, there is one element of this storyline that always struck me as kind of weak, which is or not very effective, which is when Pam has her talking head when she says, what could Jim have said to my dad to make him divorce my mom? And at what point in our marriage is he going to say it to me? And it's yeah. so blunt in the way that it's directed towards the audience that yeah. it feels kind of, I don't know, just doesn't feel like a very I don't know. It's very like heavy handed. It's very, very.
Yes, it is. It's Pam. Like, but let me write the stakes of this on a whiteboard.
But I will say that, and that is in the original cut, but in the extended cut, that talking head is balanced with another talking head from Jim right after, which honestly isn't the best talking head. Jim says, I don't know what I said, but here's what I didn't say. Divorce, apartment, freedom, online dating.
Yeah.
Divorce right. or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't think that's a great talking head from Jim per se, but balancing it, Pam and Jim both having this sort of confusion or not really understanding what happened, does kind of take the sting out of, at what point in our marriage is he going to say it to me, you know?
Yeah.
Big leap by Pam there.
Yeah. But there's having that second talking head balances it more, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, there's another deleted moment where Pam even says something like, you know, apparently my, you know, fiance is great at breaking couples up or something like that.
That was really funny.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny, but it is like, again, it's a little like, whoa, like Pam is really just like leaning into this, you know, mm-hmm. thing that she,
I like
even...
though that. Yeah. And I get that it's kind of unexpected and a little jarring, let's say.
Yeah.
But it is kind of a nice way for the show to acknowledge like Jim, Jim is so often portrayed as like this person who does these big romantic gestures and he's doing these things for the person he loves, right? And like that, a lot of that is true, of course, but it is nice for the show to acknowledge that, yeah, like there's an element of like other couples have to, other couples die so that this one could live to some extent, you know?
Yes.
Not to say that, you know, Pam and Roy was the greatest love story ever, because we know it wasn't, but it's just very funny for the show to acknowledge that Jim has a talent in this regard.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. This just reminded me, Edwin, too, another thing that's always just kind of bugged me for no reason is when Pam's on the phone with her dad and she's like, yeah, Jim has shaving cream. Like, you'd never say that. Jim would be like, hey, does Jim have shaving cream? And Pam's side would be like, yeah, it's behind the mirror in the bathroom. You know, like, yes, yeah. Jim has shaving cream. But, you know, they need to portray that he's at their house looking for stuff. So,
there is something very, like sad about that. Just,
yeah.
I don't know what it is. Also, and just, like, that it pans to Jim, who's like, okay, like, right. I don't know.
Aren't they living in the house that, like, is Pam's dad now living in Jim's parents' old house? Like, is that what's going on here?
Are they? Yeah, are they right? in the house by this point?
I can't remember.
Season 5?
Did he buy her a house yet?
We should know these things.
Mm-hmm. A house.
Oh, this is bad. We should know.
Bought me a house. Yeah.
I wish there'd been a thing about like, dad, just leave the clown painting. It's not going to come off.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, so frame Toby. Because right after she comes back from art school. So, yes, okay. They are in Jim's, the house that Jim grew up in.
Thank you. Cool. Thank you for clarifying. Any other thoughts on this storyline before we move on to the part two of Michael Scott?
The final act.
Stress relief.
Just a quick acknowledgement that there is an addition in the deleted scenes of the movie itself, like shown to us, where Jack Black walks in and sees Cloris Leachman making out with another man. Which is kind of funny to see, like the actual movie footage, so to speak.
I know. The little stair elevator, that scene is hilarious when she starts going up.
The soundtrack is really funny in the movie.
Yeah.
The Hall & Oates and the God, I can't think of, I don't know what the names of the other songs are, but yeah.
Okay, moving on back to Michael 16. Scott. So he finally realizes, after kind of holding his little meditation session for everyone, he discovers, thanks to Stanley's stress meter, that he is the one stressing everyone out. And he comes up with the idea for the Comedy Central roast of Michael Scott. I mean, this leads to so many iconic moments. I mean, ultimately, boom, roasted. But
my favorite part of this, Michael at the park talking about how he always imagines God looking at him through a high-powered telescope. I'm okay. No, I'm not.
And the turtleneck and the long black coat.
Yeah, it's a really different.
Why are you wearing
Michael.
A turtleneck?
Yeah.
Dwight asks him why he's wearing.
Well, okay, but before we get to Michael being sad, we should talk about the actual roast and the buildup to it.
Oh my God.
Really, Michael? You want us to roast you? So there is that time. There is that time of everyone compiling their jokes, Daryl setting up the stage, and the roast of Michael Scott actually coming together, which is pretty fun.
I love that going into the roast that the entire staff basically gives Michael, everyone individually gives Michael a chance to back out of. They're like, Michael, are you sure you want to do this? Like everyone knows what's coming, and you get that scene of everyone furiously writing on their desks.
Yeah.
And like everyone knows, I was like, Michael, like we all really want to do this, but like, I don't think you actually do. And they give him the chance, and he's the way in his head is this is an all, everyone will make fun of me. And then everyone will say how much they love me. And
how much they love me. Man, yeah.
No, it's not going to happen.
I mean, in a way, it is actually kind of effective, right? That's what we see with the end with Stanley laughing, and it does allow everyone to get out some of the things they've wanted to say, but it does come at Michael's expense for sure.
Yeah, it's rough.
Really, really went after my intelligence there.
Because when he sets it up, he's like you can make fun of anything. My race, how fit I am, that I am a womanizer. Three things that no one is going to talk about.
Yeah.
Nobody. Great use of deleted scenes, the extended cut here during the actual roast. We learn a lot. In some of these, Oscar having just a stand-up set that's not in Spanish. That's the only one we see in the original cut. Is the para ti, but he actually does a type five here, kind of working the crowd.
A
lot of people, a lot of extra jokes in there. I mean,
the one that stood out to me was Jim, because it does make sense. Like what we have in the normal cut is Jim talking about the phrases spider face. Mm-hmm. But it would make sense that Jim would have get more laughs with the other jokes. I always thought that was kind of strange that Jim doesn't have more jokes that are aired in the original cut and that he doesn't get bigger laughs. Cause you know, it's kind of Jim's whole vibe. Mm-hmm. And so he has this big board, or it's like a diagram of a human being. And he talks about the things that contents of Michael's stomach, the things that have been stuck in Michael's zipper, a finger, a sandwich, and Kevin's finger trying to remove that sandwich.
Yeah, he's like, there's a big question mark over the stomach for all the mystery items in his, in there. Like six, like chewing gums and two little keys from the Houdini.
Oh, the keys from the Houdini trick. From the magic trick.
Yeah.
Edible M&M wrappers that he loves that turned out to be an internet hoax.
It's a much better set. I'm surprised that they cut all that and kept the spider face.
We learned that Michael tore his ACL at one point.
Trying to jump over Angela.
And then, I mean, the coup d'etat here is, I forget who gets Jan on speakerphone here.
Oscar.
Oscar does.
I mean, whoa. Jan.
she says, you ruined my life.
You don't know how to please a woman.
You used my daughter's christening gown as a bib
when you ate ribs.
Incredible scene.
You wrote my phone message on my diploma.
Yes. mean, this is like why this episode is so great. Is as much as I have like issues with the Mrs. Albert Hannaday and that whole storyline, it's like the goods are so high in this because all of these jokes, like Michael's sitting at a really funny height in that chair, and then you get that season one Michael huge picture of him.
It's so
funny, so deeply funny that it's every shot of Michael is in a bigger version of his face right behind him and his little drum kit. It's so good.
The other thing about the christening gown joke is like, can't you imagine Michael needing a bib and looking around and finding it and then pulling it over to his head somehow and like turning to the camera and being like, yeah, shrugging and being, and then going in on the rib.
I feel like he would do it and be like, MacGyver or something.
MacGruber. I like that you mentioned the giant picture and the drum kit, because another deleted moment we get is when he's talking to Daryl about the stage. Dwight comes down and he's, you know, they talk about how the printed photo of him is way too small. It needs to be bigger. And then we kind of see that the camera kind of shows that it's it's like way too pixelated, the picture, once it's printed out. And then also he says, oh, I want a drum and a cymbal for Badum Bums. And Dwight goes, rim shots. He's like, they're called Badum Bums. He's like, technically they're called rim shots.
And then Michael goes, like, that's his way.
Oh god.
Similar to season one where he's like, dwarven elven power sword.
Peldon real 10-point power sword.
I actually have that drop. I don't know why I did that.
Elven Dragon Slayer, 10-point power sword.
We learned that Michael, when he's angry, sometimes he'll eat a spoonful of mayonnaise. That's our episode. We didn't talk about that.
That's true. But speaking of jokes that like are just really funny and are not included for some reason, he's like, we're out of mayonnaise. He goes, well, is there Jim? And he says to Jim, and Jim says, is there mustard in there? He goes, yeah. And he goes, well, what are you making? And he's like, I'm not making anything. It's just like a ridiculous exchange. Yeah.
It's kind of like the baseball. You said, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Daryl does time up there. Angela does time on stage. Andy sings his song. Michael really is taking punches left and right here.
Dwight and Dwight gets up there to defend him.
Yes.
And Michael just starts saying idiot, idiot. He's like, and that's when Dwight turns on him. Says you have no family, you have no land, small man. Yeah.
Short, pathetic little man.
Yeah. It's like, Dwight just has a knife this whole episode.
And a metaphorical one, not just the one attached to his ankle.
Indeed. Indeed.
But then, you know, anything else on the roast?
No, just that Michael pretty much leaves in tears. Kind of heartbreaking. But again, everyone gave him the chance to not do this.
Yes. Right, yeah.
Yeah. He wished it upon himself.
He did.
There is more plastic in that woman's chest than in most people.
Yeah.
He seems
tries his comebacks.
This roast is like a chance for him to also do some stand-up in front of everybody. I mean, which eventually he does back at the office, but boy, oh boy, it's a long road to get there.
I do love the scene where Michael is at the playground. We kind of get some bonus. I don't think we had him shooting hoops before.
No, we get a lot of extra
basketball. Yeah,
shooting the flat basketball is so funny.
Yeah,
very relatable feeling.
And he's like, "Oh, almost got that one."
I just want to point out too that like all the fake snow around the playground. Right, this was filmed in L.A., but they did it. I was like, man, they added a lot of snow to this. It looks a little weird, like once you kind of like realize it's like, oh yeah, they placed all that there. It's sort of like all melting.
There is an amazing scene where he's sitting at the base of a slide and there's a child next to him, and he has four pieces of bread stacked up, and he takes a bite out of them. And says, I wish I was a bird.
Yeah. But yeah, then after that, he heads back to the office for Boom Roasted, which, you know, just one of the most iconic scenes of The Office, perhaps.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it's, I mean, Stanley's, the full circle of this episode is really nice, of kind of Stanley welcoming these jokes, laughing at himself in a way that mm-hmm. releases so much tension for Michael and for everyone else in the room. And we've talked about how in season five, once Michael, you know, when he meets Holly and goes through that relationship, that he really matures and becomes an adult, really. This is another sort of ingredient in that recipe to fix Michael Scott, which is sort of like, you need to be able to laugh at yourself. You need to be able to, if you're going to dish it out, you got to learn how to take it, right? And the Boom Roasted is a pretty formidable scene for Michael.
There is, it's funny because that education, like it extends multiple seasons, a lot in season seven, but it happens again in Koi Pond when Jim has to teach him to make fun of himself.
Yeah.
But like there's an element of like give and take, and Michael getting to, on some level, they give him the chance at the end of this episode to be, you know, not only was it of being roasted, but he wanted to be the star a little bit. Cause at the end, he still does his whole thing where he's like, good night, God bless America, get home safe. Mm-hmm. He wants to play the part the entire, like the whole way through.
And he does say, like, you know, traditionally you follow your roast with some words of, you know, affirmation or some words of adornment, which no one does. But yeah, that's how he thought it would go. But he does get there eventually. I mean, do you think at the end of this episode, I feel like everyone's opinion of Michael is a net positive that come out?
I think, yeah, they've had a chance to release some stress, yeah.
Because when he comes back, everyone's like, Michael, we felt bad. Like, they kind of all have a collective, like, hey, we kind of went too... It's like, we kind of ganged up on a kid is how they feel. mm-hmm. And his response is kind of perfect. Kind of waves him off and just goes to the note cards.
Totally perfect. Yeah.
Are you wearing a turtleneck?
I want to say too that right before Michael walks in, I think is when a guy comes in with a delivery for Phyllis, and gives her a box, has her sign, and then she opens the box. It's empty, and then Dwight. There's a string attached to the clipboard, and Dwight's like pulling it away. And then he pays the delivery guy and he's like, last signature I needed or something. And then he walks away and Jim's like, why did you need the string if you paid the delivery guy? is that deleted?
Yeah.
I don't.
Yeah.
So okay, we get the thing with the string and the delivery in the regular cut. But the thing with Jim asking about the string, and then he's like, what are you talking about? The string was the best part.
That made me laugh so hard when I was watching this morning. It was like, because I had that thought immediately, like during this rewatch, I was like, why does he need the string? And then, I loved it. I really, man, watching this super fan cut, I laughed so much. And
me too.
Especially all the defibrillator material that was added in. I mean, man, I would say, like, I'm bummed that they cut that defibrillator stuff and made room for more Mrs. Albert Hannaday, I would say. yeah, this is a particularly good superfan cut.
I will say, okay, this is something that I was thinking about watching this episode. It doesn't stand out as much in terms of being consequential to the plot of the series or Jim and Pam's relationship or Michael Scott's development, you know, as a character. I mean, we talked about it a little bit, right, with the roast giving and taking a little bit. But on some level, this stands out as like, it's not the most important, but it is one of the best.
Yeah.
Like in
yeah.
terms of like the amount of comedy and the length and the runtime and everything. Like, do you think this is the best episode of The Office?
Whoa. I mean, for me, no.
Yeah, that's a no for me, dog.
But I do think that there are people who would argue that. I think you know, Shay, our listener who wrote in demanding the stress relief episode would maybe go for it.
I think comedically it's one of the strongest.
Yeah.
What do you, okay, because that's the thing that came up in my head. It's like, it's not the most important, it's not the most iconic, but it might be the best, quote unquote, just in terms of like how strong it is comedically, you know. So that was the thought that came to my head.
Yeah.
What do you think is the best episode of The Office? Whoa. And best is a very loaded term.
The whole nother episode. Yeah.
Mm. Well, we can park it if you want.
And I mean, my favorite is Murder.
Right, but that's not the same.
But
that's
But I think that the best episode is probably. Probably say.
I had to. Beach Games.
I would say the injury or I would say the injury or Office Olympics.
I think my favorite I think my favorite episode is the best episode.
Money.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was going to ask Alex, what is your opinion given that you stole Office Olympics from Sean in the last auction draft?
Stole it for a reason. I got to say shout out to my cousin Mike, who listens to the show and texted about, because him and I have been in his fantasy football league for years and we talk sports, and he texted me about just some of the drafting strategy that went on and talked about what the value picks were and
oh nice.
And I told him I thought that was some veteran savvy I showed in the budget draft there, snaking that one from you.
You did good. Yeah, you did good.
Thanks.
Eating good in there, Pipsqueak.
Final thoughts.
Good down
on...
in PA. So...
Final thoughts on stress relief before we move on.
I mean, nothing else to say from my side. The last thing I wanted to say was this question of best, and I'm very curious to hear what other people have to say as far as what the best episode of The Office is.
Last note I had is...
Edwin, do you think that it might be the best? Is there another one?
I think it might
be
the best.
Okay.
Yeah. It's not a bad pick.
I'm not trying to say that it's like unassailably yes. That's, I believe it 100%. But like, it crossed my mind when, you know, it's one of the first episodes. I believe I took it in our Office draft, episode 2. And it is, to me, one of the strongest, one of the funniest, one of the most memorable. So, and it is like an hour long. So for like all those reasons, it did pop into my head while we were watching this. But yeah. I don't know if I would go out on that limb right now. I would need to think about it, but let's debate.
A lot of meat on the bone.
Yeah.
Mm. Last couple notes real quick. Just shout out. I love the plywood on the conference room window on the Talking Heads for this episode.
Yeah,
really nice
from the
touch.
Overhead.
And I love the deleted scene we get of Andy doing his angry face that he hasn't done since anger management. Yeah. And he's like, oh, that felt good. But he does this
like the feeling of anger.
He makes this face. It really got me. I really laughed a lot. When he did it,
that was good. Yeah. That was really good.
Good use of Ed Helms there.
All right. There you have it. If you have any thoughts about stress relief that you'd like to send us, please do email us at mspodcastcompany@gmail.com. Okay. I really only have about 15 minutes left. We should do, I think, Edwin's stuff and save the trivia.
Yeah, I think so.
Sure.
All right, let's do it.
Okay.
You guys want to head to the conference room?
Let's do it.
That means conference room, 5 minutes. No, 5 seconds.
All right, so we can call this segment Back from Vacation.
Hey, now.
Now that I have returned from my sandals, Jamaica, which is the Philippines, I'll give you guys a quick little update about what that was like and a couple little office-y moments that happened during the trip.
Yes,
I'm sure that there are some that I'm forgetting, but there are a couple that really stand out.
How long were you there? 2 weeks?
I was there for 2 weeks and a couple days. Yeah. So yeah, really, really wonderful trip. Big family reunion, and also got to spend some time in Manila and then visit the small town where my mom grew up, which is something I've been wanting to do for a very long time. So pretty amazing trip, one that pretty unforgettable. And I must say, I really enjoyed listening to you guys hold down the fort. It's always fun when I get to listen to you guys do an episode. I've told these guys this, but during the parenting episode, you guys were so heartfelt and so earnest. I really wanted to look at you the way that Toby, or the way that Michael looks at Toby during the counseling episode. Just his head in his, his head in his hands when Toby's talking about the walk from the car to the yoga shop. I wanted to beam that look to you. Because you guys are just being so sincere and sweet.
I think we needed an acid to cut the fat there.
To cut the sugar. Yeah. But no, I appreciated listening to you guys. I thought it was really funny when you're like, I know you're listening. And I was like, I am listening. Yeah. So I appreciate you guys holding down the fort. It's always fun to listen to those episodes as just an audience member. So appreciate that. A couple of funny office moments that happened over the trip. I'm sure I'm forgetting some, but one was I saw we went shopping at a Divisoria, which is like this big sort of like marketplace, I guess.
We're shopping at where? What'd you say?
It's called the Divisoria in Manila. Okay. And it's kind of like trying to think. It's like an open air market. The best comparison is like, I don't want to say it's a flea market, but it's like there are a lot of different stalls and vendors and stuff, and you can And there were like a lot of stalls that were selling like Crocs, probably fake. And a lot of them had I don't know what you call them, the things you put inside the holes.
Oh yeah.
And seeing the office ones, Crocs. I was like, ah. I was like, I found some office ones there, and I was like, God, that brought me back, you know. And the other big office moment that we had was we had been on the trip for, you know, well over a week, and we were at Mall of Asia, which is one of the biggest malls in Asia. At one point, it was the biggest mall in Asia. Uh-huh. Gigantic mall. Huge. And, we split it from the group, and when we reconvened for dinner, they're like, we all want to go to Chili's. There are a lot of American chain restaurants in this mall. And yes. You know, it's funny. Normally going on vacation, I would think like the last place, or, you know, you wouldn't want to go to like an American chain restaurant on vacation. It feels a little bit like when the Simpsons go to Japan and they eat at America Town. It was really nice because, you know, I've been eating Filipino food for a solid week and a half and I love it, but you know, you need a break. And it was very nice to go to Chili's, and it was like, man, Chili's,
Chili's is the best.
Did you get a Bloomin' Onion?
No, Awesome Blossom.
Awesome Blossom.
No, we didn't, but I was really tempted to order chicken crispers because that's what Roy orders, right? It was just like, man, Chili's, The Office, it's like, this is all right. It feels like a little bit of home, you know? Those are my office moments from my trip, but yeah.
Nice. I know.
Did you feel God in that Chili's?
Yeah, it was
God. I felt God everywhere, especially in that Chili's. Yeah.
I know the Philippines is a basketball obsessed nation. Did you get any street hoops in? Did you get any play any ball?
No, I didn't get a play really. I mean, mostly it was cool. There was a little town near the place where we stayed, and there were like street games going on, and like it's like literally people playing in flip flops and barefoot and stuff.
Awesome.
On the concrete. It was amazing to watch. And then as you drive, even through the island of Palawan where we were, and even on the drive up to the province where my mom grew up, and even in all the small towns and all the schools, they all have a basketball court. Like even kind of in remote areas, like they all have a nice basketball court. So it was pretty cool to see. Yeah.
That's rad.
Nice.
And your family's good? The extended family?
How many?
Yeah, it was really, really nice. Just to get to spend that time, you know, my mom is, it comes from a very big family. So it was a really large group, and, getting everyone together was really hard. The group was, I think the working number was like 72. It came in under that slightly for the group at the reunion, which is amazing.
T-shirts.
We had t-shirts. Yeah. I have a t-shirt.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. 1,000.
Each one That's better awesome. Than the last.
Yeah.
Dude, that
it feels
so
like
great.
That sometimes over awesome. 40 cousins.
He's How wonderful. Than, that's great. Yeah. That is great. I would like to go to the Philippines at some point.
Highly recommend it. A lot of amazing things to see. And then, you know, the dollar goes very far. So it makes for an easygoing vacation experience, you know?
Yeah. Cool. Oh man. Nice. Well,
we'll have to go on a trip someday, guys.
That would be great. We still need to make our trip out to Switzerland to see you, man.
Very true.
Once we have the kids, we'll be able to. That should be a good time.
That'll free up a lot of
yeah
Newborns love Switzerland.
They love flights to Switzerland and then to the Philippines. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They can really appreciate and retain all of the information, all of the food. They can appreciate the food. Yeah.
Well, there you have it for this week's episode. If you want to give us a call and leave us a message, we do have a voicemail episode coming up soon. You can call us at 503-694-9314. You can also email us at mspodcastcompany@gmail.com. Check out our store, mspcstore.com. You can join our Discord. The link is in our show notes. And you can join us on Patreon, patreon.com/Michael Scott. For $5 a month, you can become a Scott's Tot. You get a bonus mailbag episode every month where we answer every question we get on Patreon. You also get ad-free main feed episodes and some other bonus content as well. And a portion of those funds do go to the Thurgood Marshall College Fund. So very special thanks to our Scott's Tots for supporting us. Very special thanks to Kayla and Brianna for running our Discord and to Ryan Lloyd, who designed our artwork. This episode was recorded on location in Portland, Oregon, USA, and Zurich, Switzerland.
Thank you for listening. Thanks for hanging out with us. Appreciate everyone who interacts with us on social media, who sends us emails, sends us voicemails. If you have an idea or an episode suggestion, send it to us. We're happy to do them. If you know, and just join us on Patreon, join us on Discord, wherever you get your podcast. Thanks for being part of this, this fun little community that we've built.
And join us on Captive Audience to hear us talk about movies.
We haven't even talked about that. Our second, our sister podcast, a companion podcast, more broadly about TV and film. We'll have a new episode dropping very soon. Our most recent episode
about
was
Dune.
Dune 2. Yeah.
12 Angry Men coming up.
Mm-hmm. Very true. So check us out there. But more important than all of that, take care, stay safe. We'll see you next week.
Pippity poppy, give me the zombie.
Yes, sir.
Seeking the truth never gets old. Introducing June's Journey, the free-to-play mobile game that will immerse you in a thrilling murder mystery. Join June Parker as she uncovers hidden objects and clues to solve her sister's death in a beautifully illustrated world set in the roaring 20s. With new chapters added every week, the excitement never ends. Download June's Journey now on your Android or iOS device, or play on PC through Facebook Games.